a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the January 20th meeting of Senate Commerce and Energy. Admonish everyone to please silence your cell phones and be respectful of everybody testifying, and we'll try to keep the noise in the hall down as well. With that, I ask the Secretary to call the roll, please.
Adelstein. Buell.
Here.
Johnston.
Here.
Lederman.
Here.
Rave.
Here.
Nygaard.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
There is a quorum.
Thank you. In addition, we do have several bills on the agenda today. We will, I promise, give them all proper hearing. A lot of them, I think, we'll be able to get through without a lot of discussion. And with that, I will call for a motion to approve the minutes of our previous meeting.
Second.
Motion and second to approve the minutes of the meeting of the 18th. There's no discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. We are going to defer at this time Senate Bills 43 and 44 to a later date as they continue to be manufactured. And I would ask for to bring up Senate Bill 47 and ask for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 47. I will also remind all the testifiers and other interested parties to please sign in at the podium, please, so we get the names and titles correct.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Dee Jones-Nordemir, and I'm the Executive Director for the South Dakota Real Estate Commission. Senate Bill 47 revises certain firm ownership requirements when someone owns a real estate firm, changes a couple of definitions in our chapter, and contains some cleanup as well. The cleanups, which appear throughout the bill, will change qualifying broker to responsible broker. This creates a consistency within Chapter 3621A, and that's the Real Estate Licensing Act. Also, salesperson is being changed to salesperson so as to not be so gender specific, and employing broker to that of responsible broker. Licensees associated with a broker are not employees of the broker. They are independent contractors. Now, Section 1 of this bill contains a couple of definition changes. Real estate auction, as far as the definition right now, is public outcry. We are changing that to public offering. This will bring that definition into the 21st century to include internet auctions of real estate. In addition, the Real Estate Commission started licensing broker associates on an entry level several years ago, but neglected to include that type of license in the definition of served actively. A broker associate must have 2 years of experience before that individual can become a responsible broker in charge of the real estate firm. The majority of this bill has to do with real estate firm ownership and doing away with some of the requirements that hinder individuals from owning a real estate firm in this state. Current statutes require a responsible broker who would be in charge of the real estate firm's licensing or real estate activities to own a substantial interest in a real estate firm. That means that the broker has to own at least as much as anyone else in that firm. Current statutes also require that all owners and shareholders be licensed by the commission as well. South Dakota is the only state in the nation that requires all owners and shareholders to be licensed. The commission and South Dakota, I'm sure, does not want to be accused of restricting interstate trade, and these other states make it very easy for real estate firms licensed in our state to conduct business in their state. So it would be nice to extend that same courtesy while also opening the doors to some commerce, too. Current statutes also require that if a responsible broker is placed on inactive status or fails to renew that license, the entire firm has to shut down. This means that all of the licensees in that firm have to be placed on inactive status. Sellers can no longer have their houses or their properties marketed. When they have buyer representation, those agents could not represent buyers to take them through homes. So it does cause a hardship. It also causes a hardship on those licensees that are abiding by the law. So this bill would allow another responsible broker to be assigned to the firm, and those licensees can continue to practice, and the public can continue to be represented in those transactions. Also, currently family members have an exemption in our statute. However, if something happens to the responsible broker, that firm does have to close. This would enable the family to continue ownership with that firm. They would just have to assign another responsible broker. I've probably had three calls this last year from responsible brokers who are concerned that they were very ill and were concerned that their spouse could continue to own that firm to reap some income from that. Although Senate Bill 47 does lift some regulation, it still does not jeopardize the Commission's high standard of protecting the public in a real estate transaction. There will still be a responsible broker in charge of the activities of all the associates, supervising those associates, mentoring the new licensees. The firm will also be licensed, and that would also be able to be disciplined by the Commission, which would also then include that owner that would not be licensed. This is a good bill, and I ask your support. This concludes my testimony, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nordimer. Additional proponents of Senate Bill 47. Mr. Krogman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota Association of Realtors. I won't repeat anything that's been said. I think the reasons for this bill are obvious in terms of the commerce issues that occur in ownership. Our concerns, we are in favor of the bill, but we have members who are concerned about what this might lead to, who the owners are, and so on. The question of an owner not knowing the business comes up, but the bottom line is that we depend on the Commission to regulate that business according to how they regulate now. The fact is, we may have a broker owner that doesn't do day-to-day business. I'm a good example of that. I am a broker owner, but I don't do the day-to-day business of it, and I'm not the responsible broker. So we think this is a step forward. And for those realtors that may call and say it's a bad deal, there are as many who will say it's a good deal because their business is now worth more. They can find an investor that might help their business, whether it's a commercial business or residential business. So we look at it as a positive move. We do understand that we're depending on the Commission to regulate that, to protect the consumer, according to the legislation that you all have put in place to do that. So we would appreciate your support. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Additional proponents of Senate Bill 47? Any other proponents of Senate Bill 47? With that, any opponents to Senate Bill 47? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 47? With that, I'll close for testimony and open up for commission discussion and questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nygaard.
If I could recall D to the stand.
Ms. Nordimer.
Nordimer, huh? Ms. Nordimer.
Yes.
Could you, for the benefit of the listening public and for the commission, or for the, I did it too, for the committee, give me just a description of what the Real Estate Commission. What's it made of? Who's it made of? How's it appointed? And
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's a good question. The Real Estate Commission is made up of five members, three active real estate brokers and two members of the public. And that's why when the commission was working on this, we made sure we satisfied those two public members that their interests would still be protected. The commission actually audits all real estate firms We try to get to them twice a year. We have approximately 800 firms. I have two compliance officers that audit. They go through transaction files. They also balance the trust account, making sure that all funds are accounted for on they're collecting.
Thank you.
Senator Johnston.
One follow-up, please. Are there any responsible brokers on the commission?
Mr. Chairman? Yes. We have one responsible broker who actually owns his own firm. We have two others that were responsible brokers but are now associated with the firm, but they do hold broker licenses. All three have been licensed for a very long time. They are appointed by the governor.
Additional question of Ms. Nordimer while she is at the stand. Senator Buell.
Thank you. Just so I'm understanding you correctly, did I hear you say that we're the only state that doesn't allow non-licensed brokers to own a substantial portion of a firm?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you. And open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Rave.
I would move do pass.
Motion by Rave, second by Lederman, do pass on Senate Bill 47. Discussion on the motion?
Only to say that I do think there are some concerns, but certainly I think this, as stated, is a step in the right direction, and we can certainly fix anything down the road we need to take care of. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Senator Rave. Further discussion? Hearing none. Motion is due pass on Senate Bill 47. Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein? Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present. Senate Bill 47 is declared due pass to the floor. Further action on Senate Bill 47.
Mr. Chairman, I move consent.
Motion and second to put it on the consent calendar. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate Bill 47 goes due pass, but is not on the consent calendar. Senate Bill 49. Proponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, again, I'm Dee Jones Nordimer, South Dakota Real Estate Commission. Senate Bill 49 gives the commission a little bit more authority over unlicensed individuals who practice real estate without a license. And, Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment to Senate Bill 49 that clarifies the commission's intent. With your permission, I would like to distribute that amendment now and include it in my testimony.
Please do, page
of the bill.
Ms. Nordimer, go ahead and speak to the amendment and the bill, and we'll move the amendment later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The problem of practicing real estate without a license is continually on the rise in this state. This bill would permit the Real Estate Commission to commence injunction proceedings for individuals that engage in the practice of real estate without a license. And the injunction then would be a court order requiring that individual to cease practicing in our state. The bill also allows the commission to recover its costs that are incurred in the investigatory process and the injunction proceedings. And that's where this amendment comes in. On page 1, line 12 of the printed bill, delete for injunction and insert where an injunction is granted. The commission would not want to recoup any costs if we were denied that injunction. There are approximately four or five other boards and commissions that have this particular statute on the books. And the intent of this bill is to discourage unlicensed practice. And if that does happen, that the commission could recoup some of its costs in this process. I encourage your support of this bill. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nordimer. Further proponents of Senate Bill 49. Mr. Krogman, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota Association of Realtors, and obviously we're in favor of this bill. It has been a problem over the years, and when you call the commission, they say, you know, we can't do anything but give them notice. And this gives a little bit more authority, and it's not unprecedented in that you do have a limit on car sales, that you have to be, you only can sell 5 cars before you're determined to be a car dealer, and then you fall into all the rules and regulations of that particular license. So we think this is a good bill. We have had it happen where people, because they might represent a business, think that they can go out and sell and act as a consultant, and whether that's in apartments or hardware stores or whatever. So we think it's an important bill because it does happen. And we do think that the fact that you have that license and the fact that you have passed all these laws to protect the consumer, that we need a bill like this so that they, and now understand that anybody who owns their own property has the right to sell that. They are not under this type of regulation. Okay? We are in support of the bill and would appreciate your support. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Further proponents, Senate Bill 49. Proponents of Senate Bill 49. Are there opponents to Senate Bill 49? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 49? Hearing none then, I will close for testimony and open up for committee questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nygaard.
I'd like to have Mr. Krogman return, if he could.
Mr. Krogman?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Nygaard.
Mr. Krogman, I see that the words added to Section 3621A91 include the words with the amendment. In any action where an injunction is granted, the court shall award the commission attorney's fees. Would the word may be just as appropriate? I understand from your point of view that shall would take the discretion from the court away, but I sometimes hesitate to legislate and go that far with the judiciary to make it shall instead of may.
Mr. Chairman.
Could you comment?
Mr. Krogman.
Yes, my understanding is that the LRC over the years has made a distinction between may and shall. And so that is, I think, what they recommended, but I don't know, Diem. Is that right? Yeah, so that is their recommendation. We could live either way.
Follow up.
Yes, please.
Well, in your experience, how often is shall used instead of may?
I don't know that.
There
was a time, Senator, that the LRC went through and tried to make all those changes. As the bills came in, they recommended the change, may or shall, and I'm not sure in what case or why.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Further questions? Hearing none, I'll open up for, well, we need, I would entertain a motion to move the amendment 49OA. Motion and second, amendment 49OA. Motion by Rave, second by Lederman. 49OA, is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. 49OA is adopted. Amendment 49OA is adopted. Further discussion? 49 as amended.
Yes.
Senator Nygaard.
Yes. I guess I feel somewhat concerned in that a court in some instances might feel that the commission has sought an injunction that was less than appropriate. Well, wait a minute. If they grant it, I guess they'd feel it was appropriate. I think I've answered my own concern in this one, so with that, I'd move to pass.
Do you want to continue to visit among yourself?
No, he gets kind of boring after a while. Right?
Okay. Thank you, Senator Nygaard. Further discussion and or action on 49 as amended? I beg your pardon? No, he... I'm sorry, I have to, because of the jocularity, where are we at?
Ready to vote.
Okay. Motion by Rave, seconded by Johnston. Thank you. Nygaard. Motion by Nygaard, seconded by Johnston. Thank you. Do pass on 49 as amended. Any discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein? Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous, 6 votes.
Unanimous vote to for due pass for Senate Bill 49. Further, what's been amended, so we're done. Moving on. Thank you, Ms. Nordimer. Senate Bill 21.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Martinez. I'm with the Department of Health. And currently, there's a bill brief and an amendment being passed around. And, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, if I could speak to both the bill and the amendment.
Granted.
Thank you. Senate Bill 21 is a simple and straightforward bill. It seeks to eliminate the requirement that the primary exit doors of vacation homes and specialty resorts be equipped with single-action hardware. Now, single-action hardware is a doorknob or a lever that allows a person to open the door from their interior without first having to unlock it. This requirement was put into law in 2008 as part of a broader effort to revise the fire safety standards for lodging facilities. The advantage of having single-action hardware on a door is that it enables occupants of a building to quickly exit the building in the event of a fire. Thank you. Since this requirement was put into place, there has been a lot of confusion in the lodging industry surrounding it. Essentially, what constitutes single-action hardware and what does not. The requirement has also put some vacation homeowners in a tough position because AAA apparently requires that vacation homes have a deadbolt for security purposes in order to be AAA rated or AAA approved. It really comes down to an issue of security versus fire safety. And that's probably something that should be decided on a case-by-case basis as opposed to an overall mandate on all lodging facilities. Because of this, the lodging industry has come to us and asked us to reconsider this particular requirement. While we still think that from a fire safety perspective, single-action hardware is a good idea for lodging facilities, we've come to the conclusion that there are other factors that should be taken into account, and ultimately the decision should be left up to the individual lodging establishment owners. Mr. Chairman, the amendment that has been distributed, the reason for the amendment is after we introduced the bill, we were approached by the South Dakota Municipal League with concerns from local building officials that the language that would result from this bill wouldn't quite be consistent with the International Building Code. If the bill passes, what the requirement would be is that the primary exit that leads to the exterior of their structure shall be capable of unlocking from the interior. What the amendment does is it adds a phrase, without the use of a key or special knowledge or effort. And again, that language that we're seeking to add through the amendment is consistent with the International Building Code, and quite frankly, it makes sense. With this added language, deadbolts would still be allowable. Really, any type of common door hardware would be allowable. Mr. Chairman, with that, I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez.
Thank you.
Further proponents of Senate Bill 21. Proponents of Senate Bill 21.
I'm Kim with Executive Lodging of the Black Hills, and I also am a vacation homeowner, and I propose the amendment. And just to give you an example, I had a personal experience with the single-action hardware door. I was babysitting my grandson at a friend's home out of town, and I left his diaper bag in the car. And 3 a.m, he's coughing and needs his medicine. So good thing he was crying loud enough that I needed to carry him out with me, because they had a single-action door, and I was locked out. So had I had him in the home, and it was 3 a.m, and I would have been in my car, I would have had to break in. And I see that in the vacation homes, too, that if a child gets up in the middle of the night or if they walk out the door, that they would be locked out and in a strange area.
For the record, would you say your last name?
Rupp.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it. Further proponents of Senate Bill 21. Proponents of 21.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Brish, and I represent the South Dakota Innkeepers Association, and we too support Senate Bill 21 and the way that the amendment is proposed, and primarily just for the flexibility that allows the vacation home or resort owner in determining what best fits the needs and the safety issues associated with their property. That's it.
Okay.
If you have any questions, I'll be here. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Ms. Brish. Further proponents, Senate Bill 21. Additional proponents, Senate Bill 21. Are there opponents to Senate Bill 21? Any opposition testimony for Senate Bill 21? Hearing none, I will close to public testimony and open up for committee discussion and questions. Senator Nygaard.
Mr. Chairman, when I first began my discussion with myself on this matter, I was concerned about the single-action hardware, and I think the first thoughts that come into most minds are that it was for quick egress in case of a fire. And then I remember testimony in front of Commerce last year in another matter in the House where we find that in South Dakota we have very few fires and very few deaths associated with it, and that we probably have more problems with the security, that is to say, people being able to get in where perhaps a deadbolt might have saved the day. And then in light of this testimony from Ms. Rupp, you know, I just totally missed that aspect of it, that you could actually find yourself locked out and unable to get back in when you should get in. So with that, I find myself fully in favor of this.
Thank you, Senator Dugard, Nygaard. Further questions or discussion? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adopt the amendment, 21JA. Motion and second, amendment JA. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Now, Senate Bill 21 as amended. Motion by Nygaard, second by Buell, to pass on Senate Bill 21 as amended. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein, Buell, Aye. Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman? Rave? Nygaard?
Aye.
No.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present sends 21 to the floor as a do pass motion.
I move consent.
Motion, Nygaard, second. Rave, place it on the consent calendar. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. 21 goes to consent. Thank you, those involved in Senate Bill 21. Senate Bill 23.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Rolaine Weiss, and I'm an attorney with the Public Utilities Commission. The PUC is the agency responsible for inspecting natural gas pipelines as well as certain propane pipelines in South Dakota, and we enforce the federal safety standards. So in order to enforce the most recent updates to those standards, we need to regularly make updates to our citations to the federal rules and regulations. So in this bill, we are just changing the dates from 2010 to 2011, and these are the only changes that are being made. And with that, I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 23. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 23. Is there opponent testimony for Senate Bill 23? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 23? Hearing none, I'll close for testimony and open for committee questions. If there are none, I will ask for committee action. Motion Johnston, second Rave, do pass. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein? Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman? Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present sends 23 to the floor with a do pass motion. Senator Rave. Move Rave, second Buell, consent to place it on the consent calendar. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. 23 is on consent. Senate Bill 24. Commissioner.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Gary Hansen. I'm a commissioner with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. I'm here to chat with you on Senate Bill 24. There's a couple mays and a couple shells in this bill, and what I've found in definitions is that when my children are speaking to me, it is usually may I, and when my wife is speaking to me, it's usually shall you, if that will be of any assistance. When a rate-regulated investor-owned gas or electric utility files for a general rate case increase, it's required to pay a filing fee. The filing fee is used to pay for the PUC's actual expenses in analyzing and ruling upon the rate case. The current fee is $100,000 for a general rate case or $125,000 for a general rate case when there is an integrated resource plan included. The fee is a cap, and the utility is charged only for the actual expenses incurred by the PUC up to the cap. The proposed changes increase the filing fee to $250,000 for a general rate case, and the language regarding integrated resource plans is deleted. Only the actual expenses are assessed, so if a cap on the filing fee is raised to $250,000 and the expenses are $150,000, only the $150,000 would be charged to the utility. When the filing fee does not cover all of the expenses, the additional expenses are paid out of the gross receipts fund, which is funded by all of the utilities that we regulate, including the telephone companies. The last time the filing fee was increased was in 1994, and over the past 17 years, expenses have increased substantially. The most recent rate case resulted in a cost of over $287,000 to the PUC, which exceeded the filing fee by over $162,000. The two prior rate cases that were subject to the $100,000 fee also exceeded the filing fee. Our current, we do have a current rate case. That rate case contracts already exceed the $125,000 filing fee because it has an integrated resource plan in it as well. And in this climate of Spartan budgets, it makes sense to have the cost causer pay for the additional state expenses. Thank you much, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there additional proponents of Senate Bill 24? Additional proponents of Senate Bill 24. Are there opponents to Senate Bill 24? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 24? Hearing none, I will close for testimony and open up for committee questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nygaard.
If I could ask Commissioner Hansen to return.
Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nygaard.
Commissioner, if in these cases where they went so far over, were you able then after the hearing to collect that money, or is the statute as it is today prohibit you from collecting that overdue money?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner.
Senator Nygaard, the statute presently provides that the expenses above the actual filing fee are assessed to the gross receipts fund, which is paid through the gross receipts tax. And so we recover from that.
And a follow-up.
Senator Nygaard.
And just for the rest of us, some may know what the gross receipts funds is, but would that mean other people are subsidizing the cost of that hearing other than the affected party applying for the rate increase?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Rave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have a couple questions. Could I have a little latitude?
Please do.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner. Could you just explain briefly what does the $100,000 fee cover? I mean, what costs are you incurring in doing a rate case, just so I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chairman. Okay. Senator Rave, the actual expenses that are that the state or the Public Utilities Commission experiences range all the way from the personnel time, the actual expenses that are involved in putting the rate case together, the consultants that are hired. We find it cost prohibitive, really. It doesn't make sense to hire specialized individuals to be on staff all of the time because there's so many intricacies in rate cases that it doesn't make sense to have them available all the time. Instead, we hire consultants. Consultants are expensive, but they're not as expensive as having people on board all the time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could continue that. Thank you, Commissioner. That helps. So on staff costs, you actually are adding staff, specialized staff, to help get through a rate case. Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess from a standpoint of semantics, I wouldn't call them staff. I refer to them as consultants.
Okay.
Because they're not state employees.
Okay. That's it for now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further questions? Commissioners up. Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Hansen, by increasing this to $250,000, will that possibly deter some fishing expeditions for rate increases that might have occurred in the past where they know they're only going to cost $125,000?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nygaard, I don't know of any utility that's ever pursued that, certainly in my career, either in local government or state government. I don't know of any utility that has pursued it from that standpoint. We're talking about the cost to the state in this instance, cost to the PUC in this instance of the $125,000. The cost to the utility can range anywhere from $500,000 to $1.25 million to pursue a rate case. So it's not likely that they would ever do that just to see what might happen, because the public utilities company, in addition to the expenses that would be incurred by the utility, the PUC has the ability to actually lower their rate. So if they were doing it on a basis where an NFE situation, they could find themselves actually losing.
Further questions? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
There's no further questions. Open up for committee discussion and or action. Senator Rave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move do pass.
Motion by Rave, second by Lederman, do pass. Discussion on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will support the do pass motion since I made it. You know, I don't do that without reservations. It is a significant increase, and in consultation with some folks from the industry, I do believe that these costs will roll down to the consumer. You know, much like the PUC's job is to protect the consumer, also our job is at this level somewhat. So I will support the motion, and I would ask you to do the same. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion. Hearing none, we have a do-pass motion for Senate Bill 24. The Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Edelstein? Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave? Aye. Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present sends 24 to the floor with a do-pass motion. Senate Bill 25. I'd like to back up to, please go ahead and sit down. I just, Senator Johnson, would you mind taking 47 and 49 to caucus and possibly speak to him on the floor? Okay. This is just housekeeping for me. And Senator Lederman, would you take 21 and 23 to caucus? You got off cheap because those are on consent. Senator Rave, would you speak to 24 in caucus? Thank you. Ms. Weiss, please continue.
Thank you. Again, my name is Relaine Weiss. I'm an attorney with the PUC. With Senate Bill 25, the commission is seeking the ability to use the money in its telephone solicitation account for its entire telecommunications chapter, instead of just to administer our Do Not Call program. This account is currently funded by fees and fines related to our Do Not Call program. And, of course, the Do Not Call program restricts the calling of residences for the purposes of selling goods or services. Nationwide in South Dakota, our Do Not Call program is very popular. Currently, there are over 565,000 South Dakota phone numbers on that list. Last year, we handled over 450 complaints and inquiries regarding our Do Not Call program. Our current fund balance is around $268,000. In the last 4 years, we have received amounts ranging from around $44,000 to $66,000 in revenue each year. We believe that using the funds for other telecommunications programs would be a good use of the funds. Just for a couple examples, if this bill passes, we could then use those funds to enforce our slamming cramming rules. Also for outreach efforts regarding our Lifeline link-up programs. Our Lifeline program is a program that allows for a reduction in a consumer's basic telephone service and also helps to when a customer wants to connect their phone service. And with that, I would just say that we would ask for your support, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Are there additional proponents for Senate Bill 25? Additional testimony for Senate Bill 25. Is there opponent testimony to Senate Bill 25? Opposition to 25? Hearing none, I'll close the testimony and open up for commission questions. Committee questions? Thank you.
Mr.
Nygaard.
Ms. Weiss, if I could ask you just a couple of quick things. You know, it's a very small change to the statute, and I see that this fund shall consist, instead of we change it to consist. That's simple. But on line 9, we were including the entire chapter, were there some sections of chapter 49, 31 that we're moving from 99, section 99 to section 108, and now we're including the whole chapter. Could you explain what the reason is for that?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Currently, when we reference 99 to 108, those are our do not call statutes, specific just to do not call. So any funds that we received were only to be allowed to be used to fund our do not call outreach efforts, plus the handling of complaints and those things. And so with this change, we could use the funds for our entire telecommunications chapter.
No further.
Thank you. Senator Buell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wiest, you said that the program has been drawing about $44,000 to $66,000 annually. What has been being spent down from that?
Mr. Chairman, currently we use the money, like I said, for staff time, for handling a number of complaints that, you know, we started out with 16 complaints in 2003 when it first started. In 2010, we're up to 457. And we also do for outreach efforts. For example, we our fairs, when we go to fairs, our consumer people go to senior citizens centers. And we generally just try to make the program very publicized so that people are aware of it.
Sure. One follow-up question.
Senator Buell.
So would it be fair to say that you might not have been spending all of these revenues down annually and there might be some sort of reserves building up in that?
Or Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Johnston.
Quick question regarding the number of complaints between landlines and cell phones on the do not call list. Do you see any greater preponderance of one or the other?
Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I don't have that information. I can get that to you. I didn't have a breakdown of that.
Additional questions?
Just one, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nygaard.
How much is building up in that account?
As I said, the current fund balance is around $268,000.
Additional questions for Ms. Weiss? Thank you. Additional questions? Discussion of the committee. Senate Bill 25. Or action. Senator Nygaard.
I move do pass.
Motion Nygaard, second Rave, do pass on Senate Bill 25. Is there discussion?
In just a little bit, in that if we have $250,000 sitting in the account and the statute too narrowly defines what we can utilize it for, I think it's a good time with the state of the budget to loosen up those funds and be able to cover more things with it. So I urge the do pass.
Thank you, Senator Nygaard. Further discussion to the do pass motion? Hearing none, then, the motion is do pass Senate Bill 25. Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present sends 25 to the floor with the do pass motion. Senator Lederman. Moves by Lederman, second by Nygaard. Consent. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Nay. Motion carried. 25 is on the consent calendar. Senate Bill 26. Welcome, Commissioner.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Colbeck, and I am one of the three Public Utilities Commissioners. My task here today is to explain Senate Bill 26 to you. Senate Bill 26 is a bill designed to cut the confusion caused by the implementation of interim rates. In current law, rate-regulated natural gas and electric companies can implement interim rates. But let me explain that for a second. The time frame for completing an entire rate case can take up to 1 year. Interim rates currently can be put into place at about the six-month mark. Interim rates are designed to be a financial relief for a company that feels they are in immediate need during a rate case. No approval is needed from the PUC to put proposed interim rates into effect. The problem has arisen from the statute is confusion. Confusion as to whether the PUC has granted a rate increase, confusion as to whether the consumer still has a voice after the interim rates have been implemented, which they do, but it's just the perception that the commission has voted and the case is completed. So currently, if a company decides to implement interim rates that are lower than the proposed rates, the PUC needs to approve that. The simply proposed rates do not need to be approved by the commission if they are the original request. Only lower than proposed rates need to be approved. So in other words, the commission needs to say, yes, you can put in lower rates in the interim until your rate case is decided. Or they must say, no, you cannot put in lower rates, which in effect puts in the higher proposed rate. So as you can tell, it gets confusing for the consumer to understand that a yes vote in a rate case resulted in a lower rate being implemented. In fact, part of this confusion in the rate case that it involved was voted one of the top five news stories of the area in which this happened, this rate case happened. So that brings us to Senate Bill 26. This bill, as you can see on line 5, adds the language, or a rate lower than proposed, to the original language. Also, in lines 11 through 15, language as to which rate design the company can use. The rate design refers to how much different classes of customers will be charged. This is meant to be a consumer protection, so a lower interim rate cannot be allocated to all commercial buildings or be just allocated to just residential consumers, for example. It must be allocated to the current customer classes or the new customer classes proposed. And finally, I would just like to mention that it is the opinion of all three of my commissioners on the PUC that this will allow for proper consumer protection while eliminating consumer confusion. With that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time. Members of the committee, I would respectfully request your support of Senate Bill 26 at this time, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any additional proponents of Senate Bill 26? Proponents. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Willard. I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Electric Utility Companies. They're the publicly traded, the investor-owned electric utility companies in South Dakota. We do about 60% of the business or more in state. We're largely responsible for the language in the second paragraph that speaks to rate design and the nature of it. We're very supportive of the PUC's attempt to simplify this process. We do not underestimate the role that they play in the public and the sensitivities that come along with rate increases. And they're absolutely right. I would affirm everything that Commissioner Kolbeck said about just the confusing nature of this process as the public is trying to get their arms around the increases. So we thought anything we could do to expedite the process where you impose a lower interim rate is positive for everybody. They agreed with us the manner in which it's accomplished. We're comfortable with the language, and we're very supportive, and I would request your support.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. Any questions of Mr. Willard or questions of Commissioner Kolbeck at this time? Senator Johnson.
Mr. Willard, what is the process of communication with rate or customers about prospective rate increases or decreases? Is there a standard on how you communicate, or is it on a case-by-case basis?
Mr. Chairman? There's no standard. Other than that, more is essentially optimum. In most cases, and the companies vary, the practice varies by company, but most of the companies haven't had any kind of significant rate increases for a long time. And if you go back, it's a very powerful history. And if you look at the rates in South Dakota, we're one of the lower in the country. So it's been a great process. As we gain into environmental compliance, as we gain into an era where times are changing and some of those rate increases, the practice has been traditionally is that the companies will reach out to their larger customers. They'll reach out to the big customers first, the heavy users, because that makes a lot of sense. They also, Most of the companies have got committees where they've got citizen involvement. Most of the companies are very, very active in their communities, so they'll start the dialogue before the process ever begins. They sit down and fairly arduously try to come to some resolution before we go to the commission, and then as the commissioners could tell you, the public process begins, and there's no shortage of participation. So there's a fairly active role before you ever begin the public hearing process, just trying to get a sense of, for those customers who are going to really be affected, what the increases are going to be. And then it's all public all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. Further, sorry, we're still on proponents. Are there any proponent testimony? Is there any opponent testimony to Senate Bill 26? Opponent testimony for Senate Bill 26. Additional questions of the committee? Committee discussion and or action. Motion Adelstein, second Lederman, do pass. Senate Bill 26. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed vote nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present. Senate Bill 26 is sent to the floor with a due pass motion. Motion Adelstein, second Johnston. Place it on the consent calendar. Discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. 26 is on the consent calendar. Senator Nygaard, would you carry 25 and 26 to the caucus? They're both on consent. Senate Bill 27.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is J.J. Lin. I work for the Executive Director of the Electrical Commission. Senate Bill 27 is brought before you today mostly for clarification and for some updates. One of the first things that also is a request for the expansion of the pool of the qualified individuals for one of the commission member positions. That is currently only includes instructors who teach electrical engineers. We would like to expand that so it could also include instructors who teach electricians. Section 2 of the bill documents and statute the current process being utilized by the commission in regards to the receipt and disbursement of funds. Section 3 documents and statute the current process being utilized by the commission in regards to the utilization of a third party for examination purposes. Also in Section 3, 2 years ago they put the ceiling on the maximums for the examination fees. We would request, currently the examination fees are $100. We would ask that the ceiling be raised to $150, yet the current exam fee, as far as we know at this time, there's been no notification for an increase. Yet we are requesting in the statute that the ceiling be raised. Also, to document statute that the application fee, the ceiling would be $50. In addition, in Section 3, a request of the commission that would require licensees to inform the commission of changes in personnel status, such as license status in other states, change in address or employment, and notification of a conviction of a felony. Section 4 of the statute allows contracted labor to receive the same exemption as employees of certain industries under exempt from licensure, permits, and inspection. And examples of these would be utilities and alarm system companies when the installation of alarm systems. Section 5 is a clarification on the permissive language and statute for our fee structure. Again, when the ceilings were put into the statute 2 years ago, it was missed at the plus circuits. In our fee structure, we have where you have a charge, a base charge for the service, the size of the service, and then the number of circuits is an additional. But by leaving the permissive language, what we are currently doing, administrative rule, is not compliant with what we currently have in statute. I will stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony for Senate Bill 27. Additional proponents, Senate Bill 27. Is there opponent testimony for Senate Bill 27? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 27? Hearing none, I'll close the testimony and open up for committee questions. Senator Adelson.
As I understand the change on paragraphs in line 6, page 1, that right now you have to have someone who is teaching electrical engineers, which would mean either from Rapid City School of Mines or SDSU. Why do you want to eliminate that requirement?
Mr. Chairman, we would not be eliminating that requirement, but expanding it. It would still, the number of individuals that are available in the state, as you just said, with the limitation in schools for electrical engineers, the pool of numbers available to fill that position are minimal. What we'd like to do is just expand that. It would mean that we would eliminate the possibility of it being an electrical engineer or those instructed in electrical engineers, but it also opened up to the tech eds for individuals that would be instructing electricians at the tech eds or other schools.
Do you not feel that I happen to be a civil engineer, and I think electrical, just to preface my question, Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. I think electricity is magic. I did terrible in the university when I had to take the survey course, but that was 50 years ago. I still get shocks. Don't you believe that if you didn't have the advantage of someone with the degree, because the pool is larger, you'd end up having no one with a degree on the board most of the time?
Mr. Chairman, that is a concern. The recommendation was actually brought by our current commission member that fills this position, that he's been a member for 17 years. And that's one of the reasons he has been there for 17 years is the limited pool to replace him. So to answer your question, yes, it is a concern. Would we look to the electrical engineers first for the possibility of filling the pool? That would be decided by someone higher than a level than I am, but recommendations could be made that the engineer would be the possibility, the first recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions, Senator Nygaard?
Yes, just one further question. Could you describe how many people are on the State Electrical Commission at present time?
Mr. Chairman? Mm-hmm. Certainly, Senator Nygaard. There's currently seven. There's two lay members. One member has to be at least at the level of contractor, one at least at the level of journeyman. There's also a public utilities, a public safety, and then the education position. So seven total.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you. Okay, Senator Nygaard.
Just follow up on that. The monies collected, you're proposing with this bill a 50% increase in this fee. Have we been running out of money on these in this fund to administer
Mr.
the
Chairman,
of the commission?
This would not be an increase in the fee, but an increase in the ceiling. So if we did have where the third party came back, the charges for the examination are by the third party. They set the examination fees. This would allow us to at least look at an increase up to $150 without coming back to legislature for approval. It would just be the ceiling of 150. But at this time, we are not looking to increase examination fees.
Thank you. Additional questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Committee discussion and or action. Senator Johnson.
Motion to pass.
Motion and second to pass. Is there discussion, Senator Alstein?
Mr. Chairman, would you rather that I'm uncomfortable with this, but it might be all right. I'd like to talk to someone in the profession. So would you rather that I had a substitute motion to amend, or would you rather that I let it go to the floor and amend it on the floor if I think it's necessary to delete that one word? That's the only. Which would you prefer?
Senator Alstein, since your amendment or possible amendment is somewhat in flux, I would like to see this go to the floor and amended then if your question or concern is not answered in the meantime.
Go to the floor, amended, then amended.
I would rather it go to the floor and amended on the floor because your question or concern may be answered
Thank you
prior
very much
to that. It was Lederman. We have a do pass motion and a second. Is there further discussion to the motion? Hearing none, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed say nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Unanimous vote of those present sends Senate Bill 27 to the floor. I will ask for a consent calendar motion since it is in flux. At this time, congratulations, guys. We went through our calendar. Good job. And I appreciate the agencies for presenting well and making their presentations concise and easy to understand for those of us sitting up here. With that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee, Senator Nygaard.
Move we adjourn.
Motion and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion carried. Thank you.